From the heartland of America and the gateway to the West, good morning, good evening, wherever you may be across the nation, around the world. I'm George Norrie. Welcome to Coast AM. Later tonight, Life with the Afterlife. Great programs all week long for you. And don't forget, we're on Sunday night with emerging artists as well. Here's what's happening. A recent rash of illnesses involving contaminated deli meats has now resulted in at least 10 hospitalizations and one death, according to the CDC. The health agency said that the 10 infected adults had been hospitalized as of October 22nd after ingesting Listeria bacteria in the states of New York, Florida, Massachusetts. The death involved a patient in Florida. The sick reported eating Italian-style meats like prosciutto, mortadella, salami, and prepackaged and sliced delis. Jeez. The United States, Russia, and France set new daily records for the coronavirus infections as a second wave swelled across parts of the Northern Hemisphere, forcing some countries to impose new curbs all over the place. In late September, California officials predicted that the state could see a whopping 89% increase in COVID-19 hospitalizations within the next month. But 30 days after that dire prediction, the rates of virus-related hospitalizations have gone down considerably. That was some good news. And the coronavirus pandemic has led millions of Americans to turn to their homes from their offices, and they've turned them into classrooms. It's also forced many to change their habits to keep their internet bills in check. Let's check in with our expert, Lauren Weinstein, on the internet. Hey, Lauren, what's going on with this story?
Well, you know, for a while there, some of the big ISPs had suspended their usual bandwidth caps that had extra charges, but now we're starting to see bandwidth caps coming back. In fact, Spectrum, aka Charter, has petitioned to impose bandwidth caps sooner than they had agreed to under their merger agreement with Time Warner Cable. So the big ISPs are basically getting greedier than usual again, desperate for more internet income because people are dropping traditional cable and satellite TV services in favor of streaming, Roku, Android TV, Fire Sticks, and other tech like that. So the bandwidth caps and associated excess usage fees are an easy way for them to bring in more money. And when you know your subscribers are going to be using more data now because they're doing video schooling and video work from home, this is a situation that's going to grow now since we're now having COVID increases again. So a large segment of this remote activity is likely to become permanent one way or another. Also, when it comes to availability of these services, you have ISPs like AT&T who failed to fulfill their promises for fiber. They had stopped expansion in areas where they originally said they were going to be providing affordable internet fiber service. I live just a few hundred feet from existing AT&T fiber. They won't let me get it unless I'm willing to pay enormous extra fees every month that I can't afford, so I can't get it. So look, it's even during a pandemic, it's like we might have predicted, the big ISPs are trying to find every possible way to squeeze us for every last dollar.
And will people be used now to working out of their homes when COVID starts to go away and companies say, "Hey, come on back to work." I don't know how many people will want to do that.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. The experts who have looked at this, the ones, you know, the human factors folks and the people that understand office home work relationships and such, say that we'll never get back to where we were. Obviously a lot of people are going to be going back to offices. It may not be every day, though. It may only be certain days of the week. There could be satellite offices now instead of having everybody driving back to big central buildings. It has changed now, and the, you know, we hear new normal a lot, but that's the reality. The old normal is not the way it's going to be.
How'd you like to be owning commercial real estate right now, Lauren?
Boy, you know, you look at cities like New York where they have the giant office buildings.
Oh my gosh!
And, I don't know how they're ever going to fill them again. I mean, you can never say never, but so much has been based on everybody driving in or otherwise using transport to get into these central locations. And it's kind of ironic in a way, because for so many years people had talked about remote work, and it took a virus to actually make it happen.
You got that right. Lauren, thanks for your input. I always appreciate it. Amy Coney Barrett has been sworn in as the latest Supreme Court justice at ceremonies at the White House tonight. She took her constitutional oath. The Supreme Court said in a press release that she will be able to start her new role after Chief Justice John Roberts administers her judicial oath on Tuesday as well. Justice Clarence Thomas administered the constitutional oath at the Monday night ceremonies at the White House. The United States is warning it will destroy potential Iranian long-range missile shipments delivered to the Maduro regime in Venezuela, according to a senior official. They are going to get tough on that situation. A longtime pilot photographs mysterious orange orbs in daytime skies over North Carolina's mountains. Incredible story there. What else is going on in the skies? Let's check in with Dr. Sky Stephen Cates. Hey, Stephen, what do we have this week?
Hello, George. We have a jam-packed edition here, and we talk about the moon as we talk about astronomy. Some important information on this Saturday's Halloween full blue moon. George, here we go with Moon 101 education. For a moon to be officially known as full, it must lie exactly 180 degrees from the sun, and this lasts actually for a very short time, and we actually get a true full moon on Halloween and Halloween night for most of the Western Hemisphere. The moon, George, will lie in the constellation Aries and will be full at 9:49 a.m. Eastern Daylight Time, 6:49 a.m. Pacific Daylight Time, but most observers, of course, will see the moon on the evening of the 31st, Halloween night. Not seen as a full Halloween full moon since 1944 in all time zones of the U.S. This is incredible. And if, George, if you miss this one, plan on seeing the next one. Jot it down, October the 31st, Halloween of 2039. And these repeat in a 19-year period that has to do with advanced physics of how the moon moves. But this moon, George, is also unique in that it will be a micro moon, the farthest of all the full moons of 2020, a position we call apogee at some 252,000 miles distant, as opposed to the super perigee full moon that we had back on April the 8th when it was 221,000 miles away. But the next closest full perigee moon, here's something fascinating, George, will occur on the night of May 26, 2021, yes, next year, and guess what we get? We get to see a total lunar eclipse on that night, too. Wow. But now, George, we shift to space with an important lunar discovery. NASA announced today an important discovery made by the NASA Sophia aircraft. That's the aircraft that we reported and had a lot of fun, George, a couple of years ago.
You and Tommy were on that one, right?
Oh, it was great. That was one of the best flights of my life, and we hope to do it again. But the recent revelation is that water molecules exist on the surface of the sunlit side of the moon. The NASA team, of course, detected water molecules from a region of a large crater called Tycho. That's near the large crater Clavius. And this, of course, done in the infrared region of the spectrum in which the Sophia does look through into space. This is great news and provides for future manned missions, potentiality of producing and harvesting water for NASA's Artemis missions in 2024 and beyond. But we wrap it up, George, with the live sky gets set for the Great Pumpkin Halloween full blue moon on Saturday, as we talked about. But until then, observers right now, if you have a clear sky, a gibbous moon, George, looks like an egg-shaped moon high in the sky. But in binoculars, look at the lower part of the moon, the impact crater Tycho, where all this water molecule area has been found, I gather. Easy to see in the lower left area of the moon. You can see it's the area on the moon that has the giant ray system that looks like a big navel of an orange. Was allegedly hit by an impact of an asteroid 108 million years ago and first mapped in the year 1645. And this is the region of the moon also for sci-fi fans in the 2001 Space Odyssey epic. The astronomers and astronauts then who checked out the Tycho Magnetic Anomaly 1, simply known as the strange artifact known as the monolith. And wrapping it up quickly, Mars, George, is still great to view in the east at sunset, and advanced observers have detected some type of dark streak or possible cloud near one of the large volcanoes, a 63,000-foot extinct volcano known as Arcia Mons. This could be a large ice cloud or orographic cloud, or the start of a new dust storm, Mars now some 41 million miles away. Check all this information out and go to thelivesky.com. Email me, and we love that, drskyshow@gmail.com. Always remember to keep your eyes to the skies, George. I'm your navigator on the highway to the heavens, and appreciate you, George, and all the listeners.
You too, my friend. Have a great Halloween, and thanks for the great space information. How would you like to become financially independent? In a moment, Jason Stapleton joins us, author of the Nomadic Wealth Formula. We're going to talk about how you can get there next on Coast to Coast AM. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you. Our special guest for the next couple hours, Jason Stapleton. Let me tell you a little bit about Jason here. An American entrepreneur, former Special Operations Marine living in Los Angeles. His first company was called Trade Empowered. He launched that back in 2009, quickly became one of the largest and most respected trading educational firms on the planet, boasting tens of thousands of clients in more than 110 countries. In 2014, while still running Trade Empowered, Jason launched another company, Wealth, Power, and Influence, which was a podcast dedicated to helping people better understand current events and how to have more control over their own lives. It quickly grew to more than 30,000 daily listeners, hit number one on iTunes in multiple categories. In 2017, he left Trade Empowered to start his own consulting company called Stapleton Group. He works with small and mid-sized businesses to build authority brands and develop content marketing and advertising strategies to help them gain market share, increase loyalty, and improve customer intention and retention. And recently authored the book Nomadic Wealth to help folks achieve financial independence regardless of where they live. Jason, welcome to the program, and thank you, first of all, for serving.
Hey, George. Thanks so much for having me.
Iraq and Afghanistan.
Yeah, both of them for periods of time.
What was it like out there?
Well, my first trip overseas to Iraq was in 2005, and I was in Mosul, which is in the northern, kind of the northernmost part of Iraq before you get into what's known as Kurdistan. And it was probably the most dangerous place on earth at that time. We had about 25 IEDs a day that went off. And my job was protecting diplomats and people who were part of the provincial reconstruction team. So I did high threat security. And so it was dangerous, but a little exciting. I don't know. It's always funny when I say it was exciting because people are like, really?
You got exactly.
To wires crossed or something to think that. But it was an exciting time. I was 26, 27 years old. It was interesting.
My Navy unit got called up to Desert Storm, but I had retired 1 month before that unit got called up, and they were assigned to work with General Schwarzkopf in Saudi Arabia, providing the public information for the rest of the planet on what was happening in Iraq during Desert Storm back in 91. So those were interesting times. But again, thank you for what you did and serving. And my gosh, did you develop something with all of this? How did this idea come to you for building these kinds of companies and operations?
I was served in the military for 4 years, and when I got out, I didn't have many skills. And so I guess I was lucky. You could say that I was lucky in a way because I had the opportunity to go back overseas and work in as a contractor and do some, get paid to do that. And that left me with a lot of money. And a lot of time on my hands, because it turns out diplomats don't really want to go out and get shot at. So, we would take them around. I probably only worked about 2 days a week. And the rest of that time, I had to decide what I wanted to do with my life. And so initially, what I said was, I asked a question. I said, if I can do anything in the world, but I got to do it every day for the rest of my life, what would I want to do? And I thought, well, what I'd like to do, I think, is work in finance. And I said, I don't know why. I don't know anything about it, but I've always had an interest in the stock market and that kind of stuff. And so I used every spare minute of my time when I wasn't working in Iraq or Afghanistan studying the financial markets. And I got pretty good at it, and I thought I'd start a hedge fund. And then I realized how incredibly difficult that was, how much regulation there was, how much bureaucracy, the costs that were involved with it were outrageous. And I thought I was going to have to give up on that dream. And I did a little bit more research. And what I figured out was, there's a lot of regulation if you want to take somebody else's money and you want to invest it for them. But if all you do is tell them what you would do if you had their money, there's virtually no regulation on that, no cost to get started, very low bar for entry. And so instead of starting a hedge fund, I started an education company. And I'm really glad that I did, because it was far more empowering, I think, in the long run than going and starting a hedge fund. I've always said that money only matters to people who don't have any. And once you have some, enough to be comfortable, enough to have a good life, your life's work becomes more than about just making money for most people. And for me, that was certainly the case. So I spent the next 10 years roughly growing this education company and helping a lot of people figure out how to invest their own money.
And Jason, you have said that building an information-based company is the greatest way to start a business.
Yeah, I think so. I've started a lot of businesses over the years, and for a lot of reasons, I think information businesses are perfect. Number one is that they have really low startup costs. So you can do it part-time. So even if you don't have a lot of time to devote to it in the beginning, it's something that you can work into. I think our education system in general is shifting from largely a production-based economy to then an information-based economy. And now it's really morphed into something different. And with our education system changing and the way we find knowledge and we learn things changing, and with a deep need for highly technical expertise in an environment and an economy where it is changing literally faster than colleges and schools can adapt, that puts you in a really unique position to share what you know after working in your job for 10 years, 15, 20 years with people who really need to know it. And so for all those reasons and for many others, I've just found it to be an incredibly rewarding and lucrative business to be in.
Jason, how did you build your first company, Trade Empowered, to have thousands and thousands of clients? How did that happen?
Well, I started with one. I started with about 10. So what happened was I was overseas in Afghanistan, and I was trying to figure out if this is something that I could do. And so I started creating these little like 20-minute videos that I put online. And I found a little chat forum back at that time in 2008, 2009. Chat forums were still kind of a big deal. And I found a chat forum and I started posting my video there. And originally the owners of that company came to me and they said, "Hey, Jason, we like this video. Would you like do this every week for us and then just post it?" And I said, "Sure, I'll do that." And then at the end of every video, I would just say, "Hey, you know, if you want me to email you this video, so as soon as I release it, so that you don't have to like come here and find it, just give me your email address and I'll send it to you every week." And after about, about 3 months of doing that, I had about 100 people who'd sign up for my little list. And then I just decided, you know what, I'm going to see if I can make some money with this. And so I sent them all an email. And I said, "Hey, listen, if you want me to send you every single trade that I take right after I take it, then I'm happy to do that. All you got to do is pay me $250 a month." And I sent like one or two emails. And at the end of that, I had about 10 people who had signed up for my little subscription service. And instantly, I had a $30,000 a year business. And I sat back and I said, "Well, that's pretty easy because I'm really not doing anything except sending an email every time I place a trade."
Mm-hmm.
And I thought, well, there might be something to this. And so I really set a goal of creating a business that would replace the income that I was making overseas. And I was able to do that in about a year.
Now, when you left Trade Empowered and you started that company, so to me, it sounds like you sold it. What happened there?
Well, I didn't sell. So you're talking about when I left Trade Empowered to run the podcast and everything?
Exactly.
Yeah. I didn't sell it. What happened was trading is a really repetitive business. You do the same thing over and over and over again. And after about, 8-9 years of teaching the same thing over and over again every single day, I just got tired of it. I just got burned out. And I had spent the same time I'd spent teaching trading, I'd also been building my own business. And so I'd learned a lot about sales and marketing and how to build a brand and how to establish yourself online and how to find people and get them interested in what you've got. And I went to my business partner and I said, "You know what, I really don't want to do this anymore." And we ended up parting ways. And what I ended up doing after that is starting what's now called, Stapleton Group, which is just I did the same thing. I asked, "Well, if I could do anything, what would I do now at this stage of my life?" And I said, "I'd like to teach all this stuff that I learned about how to build businesses so I could help other people kind of break out and do what they love." Because I think for most people, they wake up after college and it's 10, 15, 20 years down the road. And they wake up out of kind of a daze. The kids are like growing up and they're getting into high school or maybe they're off to college and they realize, "I don't know how I got here, but this is not the way I envisioned it being. I don't want to get up and go do a job that I don't enjoy with a boss that I can't stand and do the commute to work. I want something different for my life, but they don't have any idea how to make that happen.
Hold on, Jason. We'll talk more with you when we come back. Jason's website is his name, jasonstapleton.com, linked up at coasttocoastam.com. We'll be back with more, and we'll take calls with Jason next hour on Coast to Coast AM. We're going to take calls with Jason Stapleton next hour here on Coast to Coast, author of The Nomadic Wealth Formula, so make sure you're part of the program. In case you missed last week's announcement, we have started the Paranormal Podcast Network with a couple shows initially, and it's growing, and it's exciting. Tom, you're getting calls like crazy, aren't you?
It is up and running, the iHeartMedia and Coast to Coast AM Paranormal Podcast Network. We're thrilled to announce this. This is a lot of fun. This is a new network. We feature podcasts of the paranormal, supernatural, and the unexplained. So you can hear these podcasts on iHeartRadio app, the Apple Podcasts, or wherever you find your favorite podcasts, really. The two debuting shows, they've been up for a week, Shades of the Afterlife with Sandra Champlain and Strange Things with Joshua P. Warren. I'm sure you've heard them both on Coast to Coast AM. So we put up new episodes of each show every Friday, and new podcast shows will be added in the upcoming week. So we're going to build upon that. The easiest ways to get these shows, if you're on a mobile phone, just download the iHeartRadio app. There's a little search in the right-hand corner. Just type in the name of the show.
So you go to your app store and just look for iHeartRadio and
download
that little app.
Okay. Yeah, or sometimes you have to type in the name and then the app will pop up. And then there's a little looking glass just that says search. Just type in the name of the show. And then if you're on a regular PC, just go to iHeartRadio.com. And the same thing in the top right-hand corner, a little eyeglass. Just type in the name of the show and boom, you're there. Now, here's the good part. For right now, Lex has done great. He's got up in the carousel. It's all there for you. Just go to the fifth button underneath the carousel, and the two links are right there, and boom, you'll have the shows in no time.
Now, there's also a little button that says show all podcasts, right?
Sometimes it does. Sometimes it doesn't. I noticed it varies, but if it does, just click it so all the podcasts you see right in front of you. And what you want to look for is the Coast to Coast AM logo.
That's the important thing, because some people may not know the name of the little show they want to listen to.
Right. Well, it'll say, like, it'll be our logo, and then it'll say Joshua Warren or Sandra Champlain.
Super. Okay, folks, it's the brand new Paranormal Podcast Network. It is growing. Tom is getting calls from people who are podcasting right now. There's a group of us that listen to the programs first, so Tom doesn't decide all by himself. It's not his fault if you don't get on. And welcome back to Coast, George Norrie with you, our special guest tonight, Jason Stapleton, his website linked up at coasttocoastam.com. And Jason, of course, you've got a podcast going called the Jason Stapleton Program, and also now Wealth, Power, and Influence. Tell me, how did you get rolling into that? And that has grown too, hasn't it?
Yeah, it's been reasonably successful. So I started that show in late 2014. Because I had been studying trading and had been involved in that industry for so long, I wanted to talk about what I thought created the most amount of wealth for the most amount of people. I'd studied international banking and central banking and trying to understand how all that works, and I thought I had a pretty good handle on it. So I started the show to talk to people about that stuff. And we used current events and what was going on in politics to discuss how you go about understanding what you're seeing in the news, because I think a lot of people don't really understand what they read and what they see, because our education system doesn't spend any time teaching them that stuff. And so I wanted to walk them through it in a way that, regardless of your education level, you could begin to understand economics and politics on a different level.
And it's working for you. People love it.
It's been pretty successful. There are around 30,000 listeners a day. We used to do the show 5 days a week, but I cut it back because I got so much other stuff going on. But we do it Monday, Wednesday, Friday, and just having a blast with it. It's a lot of fun.
Isn't it exciting to nurture something and watch it grow?
Yeah, and I'm sure you know this from your show and the wild success that you've had with it over the years. But, it's nice to see something that you've poured your heart and soul into, to see people respond to it in such a positive way. And I have great fans, I have great listeners, and a really great support system around me. And I feel very blessed to be where I am today.
And tell us about the title of the new book, The Nomadic Wealth Formula. Tell me about that.
Yeah, so as I said, I think information businesses are some of the very best businesses that one can start. And I was looking out because I talk about politics, I talk about economics and central banking and all this stuff a lot. And one of the things that concerned me is I see people pouring a lot of time into political elections in terms of nominations for Supreme Court justices. And I've found that over the years, from what I've seen studying it every day, that very little changes, that we spend an inordinate amount of time focused on who's going to be the next president or who's going to win the Senate or the House. And really what makes us the freest is how much wealth we have and how mobile that wealth is. So do I control my income or does somebody else control it? How much of it do I have? And then can I leave and take my income with me? And so I found that the best formula for creating freedom in your life is to create nomadic wealth. And so I sat down after COVID hit and I watched 40 million people go on unemployment. And I said, there's got to be a better way to teach people to build businesses and build wealth than we've done it before. And I wrote that book. And it's been a big success. I've been really happy with the performance of it. But more than anything, I really like people emailing me and texting me and sending me notes and saying, hey, you know what, I'm getting value out of this. I've decided to take what you taught in the book and actually apply it to my own life, and I'm having success. That to me is bigger than anything else.
That's great. I'm on the History Channel's Ancient Aliens, and I swear I've seen you on the Tesla Files as the investigative reporter. That's got to be you.
Yeah, that was me. Me and Travis Taylor over there. That was a blast of a show. And being somewhat of a skeptic, I would not consider myself a conspiracy theorist or a conspiracy buff, but that was a real adventure, and I'm glad they asked me to do it.
Jason, we're hit with COVID-19 right now for whatever you think it is, but the fact is it's had a devastating effect on a lot of people's jobs, on businesses, on retail. It's hurting a lot of people. How do we cope beyond COVID-19? How do we cope with trying to get back to some semblance of what we were once in terms of financial and economic?
Well, I think the number one thing that anybody can do, no matter where they're at in their life right now, is to build their own human capital. So that's the store of knowledge and skills that gives you value in an economy. Again, I think a lot of times we focus on laws like minimum wage and things like that as ways to kind of like move ourselves up the ladder. But economically, those don't really work. What does work is you having rare and specialized skills that not a lot of other people have that will command a high wage, that will put you in control of your own life and your own future. And if you look at the people who have been hurt the worst, it is always the poorest among us. It is always those people who have the least in-demand skills, the people who have sat around and who have failed to go out and increase their knowledge with the changing times. Those are the folks who suffer the most. And if you want to protect yourself, your family, your future from future catastrophes like this, the very best way you can do it starting today is to go out and learn a new skill that's in high demand.
Are you like the Anthony Robbins of wealth in terms of motivating people?
I don't. Here's the thing. I'm probably the anti Tony Robbins because I don't know. I wouldn't classify myself as all that motivating. What I am is a realist. I tell it's time. You need to stop crying, stop complaining, stop looking externally for somebody to put your problems on. You are where you are today because of the culmination of your past decisions. And the great thing about that is, even if you find yourself in the gutter, you can make the changes to be on the mountain again. And for those people who are on the mountain right now and they're living fat and happy and they're really, you know, they've done everything right, you can easily find yourself in the valley again if you don't continue to make good choices. But it is on us. And I think we do ourselves a disservice by looking outside at somebody else to put our problems on.
What do you think of some of these stimulus packages that the government has got out there now, both in its payroll protection program or SBA loans to small businesses to try to keep them above water? Do you think that's necessary?
Well, yeah, I think if you tell businesses that you can't go to work and you can't operate, that you're either going to have some riots on your hands or you're going to have to come up with some other program to fix it. Do I think that it's a good thing? No, it's a terrible thing. Economically, it's going to be awful, because what it does is it adds to the total number of dollars in circulation. And what happens is it doesn't matter who you give that money to. So even if you took all $2 trillion, they're talking about $1.8 trillion, even if you gave it all to the poor are quickly going to spend it. And they're going to give it right back to the people who own the businesses and to the wealthy. And so what you get is you get massive wealth transfers of newly created money that pass from the poor to the wealthy, increasing wealth inequality in the world and putting the poor no better off than where they started. It is an absolutely horrific concept that we just continue to repeat.
I've got a friend of mine who owns his own limousine company, and 90% of his business, Jason, was airport runs, and we know what's happened to that right now. Mm-hmm. So it's plummeted. But he applied for an SBA stimulus loan, and they gave him $26,000, no payments for the first year, and then 30 years to pay back the $26,000. That's not a bad deal.
No, it's not, and I don't even think they want the money back. When you create money out of thin air, who cares whether you actually get it back or not? That's not the point. The government, all the government really wants to do is just keep people quiet and keep them satisfied. And unfortunately, what people don't understand, your average Americans, they don't understand the true economic ramifications of this type of spending and this type of wealth creation. I mean, we're at a stage now where hyperinflation is not outside the realm of possibility. People have been talking about it for years, but we've created $14 trillion in the last 6 months, and they're talking about another 4 to 12 for the next, in the next 6 to 12 months.
Yeah.
That's money printing on a scale that you know, we haven't seen in America ever, and that few countries have ever dealt with. So we're staring down the barrel of some real ugliness in the future.
Stock market dropped 600 points today. Is that a barometer of things to come? And not everybody, by the way, you know, listening to this program, for example, is invested in the stock market. You know, most of them just have jobs and get a salary, and that's the way it is. But the fact that the stock market took it on the chin today, what does that tell you?
I don't think it says anything at this point. I haven't been in the markets for, you know, over a decade now. There's no real correlation between actual economics and what the stock market does. The stock market is playing off of what it thinks the Treasury and central bank is going to do. And if they believe the central bank is going to continue to prop up the economy and the markets, then they're going to keep buying. And these little dips, and I know a 600-point dip sounds like a big dip, but it's really, in consequence, is relatively small.
Right.
It's a blip. It's not even anything that you need to consider. What you got to pay attention to is, what's the Fed going to do? If the Fed decides it's not going to print any more money, or they're going to stop buying equities, then you got to worry. But right now, no, just hang on to what you got.
Jason, in your book, Nomadic Wealth, you talk about three pillars of wealth. Explain that for us.
Yeah, so for me, I think the three pillars of wealth, as I understand them and explain them, are first and foremost, increase your human capital, as we talked about already. The second is to control the source of your income. And that just means own your own business. Be in control of how your money comes to you and what's required to bring it to you. Anytime you rely on a boss, that now puts you in a position where you're relying on somebody else for your income. And then finally, as best you can, try and make that income mobile. So the nice thing about my business being an information business is that if I want to leave and move to another country, if I want to go on vacation, if all of a sudden it becomes inhospitable to live here, I can be gone tomorrow and my business comes with me and I don't lose a beat. That's what it means to have a mobile income, income that moves from place to place. And if you can put those three things together, you're going to be in really, really, really good shape no matter what happens to our economy.
What's next for you? What do you keep doing, Jace?
Well, now it's spreading this message. That's why I'm on with you tonight, is I really just want people to be part of what I'm talking about and what I'm teaching. And I even give away free copies of my book. Your listeners can get it by going to nomadicwealthoffer.com, and I'll just give you a free digital copy of the book. I'm not trying to make any money off of it. I want to get it into the hands of people. And I'm going to try and change as many lives as I can with the days I've got left.
Well, you got many days left, my friend. You went through Iraq and Afghanistan, and knock on wood, you're still with us.
I hope so, yeah.
I'm sure you saw some things that you can't repeat out there, I bet, huh?
It was an ugly time. War is an ugly, ugly business, as I'm sure many of your listeners know. And we should enter into it only in the most dire of circumstances, because there's nothing good about it. But I was lucky enough to come back with all my fingers and toes and with my honor. So I'm proud of that.
You think we should be out of there by now, both places?
Oh, yeah. We should have been out of there many, many, many years ago. And I wish more and more military men are starting to stand up and speak out about it, and I think that's a great thing.
I think so, too. And I think the biggest problem, Jason, they did during the Vietnam War is they didn't support our troops. You know, they blamed our troops for the war. It's not their fault. It's the politicians that got us into that stuff.
That's correct, yeah. No, I think it's very noble for you to stand up and say, hey, if my country needs me, I'll go and give my life if necessary. I think it's an absolute abomination to send those men to serve and to fight and die for a cause that is not necessary. And I think certainly today, regardless of what you thought when we started, certainly today you can look at what's happening and say this is wholly unnecessary to be putting our sons and daughters at risk.
I'm sure the troops would speak at night, why are we here? Did that happen a lot?
Yeah, I think so. I think for most young people, they're fed this idea that, hey, I'm going there to spread freedom and democracy, and I'm doing the right thing, and I want to do what's best for everybody. I certainly had that when I was in the service, but as I began to look around and see what was actually happening, I realized, man, that's not what we're doing here. What we're doing is fulfilling some sort of political agenda, and we're the pawns in this game, and I don't appreciate that. I will go and fight. I'll die, but I don't want to do it for nothing, for no reason.
Of course not.
You can't even tell. Yeah.
Are you glad you have now taken the financial path you've taken for yourself personally?
Yes, I'm happy with my life. Let me put it that way. I wouldn't have traded my time in the service or my time in Iraq and Afghanistan for anything. I learned a lot about myself, and it's an interesting story. But, yeah, I'm really, really happy with where I'm at today.
In terms of adjustments, would you do any changing looking back?
I would have given myself a lot more credit, and I would have taken a lot more risks early on.
Really?
Yeah. I mean, in the military, I'm not talking about, like, risks on my life, but in business. I've found that nowadays, I look at my life, and I say, what's the worst that could happen? I could go broke.
You do it, and you do it again. Start all over again.
Yeah.
Jason, we're going to take a break. We're going to come back and take a final hour of phone calls with you. So if you have questions with Jason Stapleton about the nomadic wealth formula that he's talking about, or if you want to share your own personal story of you starting your own business, how you've done, share that too.